From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Coming up, we have a big event in Rome. Of course, canonization of the young saint, Blessed Carlo Acutis. He'll be a saint, and I'm sure there'll be many people there, including myself, to revel in this new moment in the church where we have the first millennial saint. And we're so excited to devote the show today to Carlo Acutis. And some people may know I consider him my favorite new saint, or I guess you could say my patron saint, whether it's praying to him for my technology that doesn't work or the building of my MiracleHunter.com website or anything else that focuses on miracles, my Eucharistic Miracles miniseries, for example. All these things, I pray to Carlo for his intercession because of his focus on Eucharistic miracles and Marian apparitions and miracles and otherwise to evangelize. So I feel a connection to Carlo in that way. And on this week's show, we're going to be talking about Carlo Acutis in two interviews. Tim Moriarty, the director of the film Carlo Acutis Roadmap to Reality, that is out in theaters starting on April 27th. People can go to carloacutisfilm.com for more information. But talking to the director of that beautiful new film will be a lot of fun. We'll talk about how he portrayed the life of Carlo Acutis. In addition to the radio show, of course, I have programs on EWTN, so people who like to follow my coverage of miracles, they can check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which is my program about people on the path to sainthood, with a special focus, at least for now, on Americans. And so I have a book that's out called They Might Be Saints, which is available at EWTNRC.com. But also people can follow They Might Be Saints on social media and watch the show. You can even watch episodes on EWTN's on-demand service for free. They have all the shows posted there. But for people who want to watch on television, the new episode that's coming out on September 16th is They Might Be Saints, Rhoda Wise. So in Canton, Ohio, Rhoda was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles, and one of them was experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica, the foundress of EWTN. So I'll be relating that remarkable story. And also you can check out my series on EWTN, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, traveling all around the world to the most famous places of miracles. And for those people who follow the show and have seen a lot of replays, this is exciting because we have brand new episodes coming out just now. And so every Saturday at now 5:30 p.m. Central Time, not 5 p.m., they've changed the time a little bit, but on September 13th at 5:30 p.m., the Buenos Aires episode will air. And so in Buenos Aires, I uncover the story behind a modern Eucharistic miracle and the astonishing testament to the real presence and investigated by the future Pope Francis. So check that one out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter on Saturday, September 13th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or Central Time, excuse me. And again, this is a brand new episode, has never been aired before, so I encourage people to check this one out. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today, we've got Blessed Maria Lopez de Rivera Martinez, who lived from 1560 to 1640 in Spain. The 365 Days with Mary project, where we look at the Marian devotion of the day, Our Lady of the Mount from Banamumbai in India in the year 1570. And the question of the week, is it possible that the children killed in the recent Minnesota shooting may be someday canonized as martyrs? Tough question. I'll try to answer that one later in the show. And the miracle of the day, Our Lady of Salta, the Virgin of the Miracle of Salta, Argentina, from 1692. I'll try to tell you a little bit about that one in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And I've often joked or commented, people say, you know, if you were betting in Las Vegas, who would be the next American saint? Of course, typically you need to be a blessed for that to happen and needing only one miracle to advance. And I've always said that Michael McGivney is the one who will make it because he has so many people, so many members of the Knights of Columbus praying for his intercession. And so, well, we have a miracle that's being reported by the Connecticut Insider. So in Watertown, Connecticut, there was a high school athlete, Cole Itzery. He was scheduled for surgery in early 2025 after a brain lesion, a suspected tumor, caused debilitating symptoms. But in a remarkable turn, in a preoperative MRI showed the lesion had disappeared entirely without surgery, chemotherapy, or radiation. And doctors are uncertain what caused the regression, but Cole and his family attribute this recovery to a prayers to the priest and relic of Blessed Michael McGivney. Itzery went on to then have a standout senior baseball season, and he plans to play in college. And so that's a potential miracle that may be considered toward the canonization of Blessed Michael McGivney, the founder of the Knights of Columbus. For more information on this story or any of the other miracle stories happening around the world, you can go to the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. My friends who know me know that I love trivia. You might find me playing pub trivia on some random night at a bar somewhere, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia. So we'll give you a question, and if you know the answer, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on MiracleHunter.com. So the question for this week is, actually it's last week's question, who was the last Italian male to be canonized? And the answer is Saint Giuseppe Alamanno, who lived from 1851 to 1926. He was an Italian Catholic priest who established the consulate missionaries for males and another one for females, and the Consolata Missionary Sisters. Alamanno also served as the rector of the Santuario della Consolata and transformed the shrine into a source of spiritual renewal for the faithful. He was beatified on October 7, 1990, and canonized on October 20, 2024. So he is the most recent Italian male saint to be canonized. And to stay on the theme of Carlo Acutis, we have his feast day having been announced for October 12th every year. And what major Marian miracle from South America is also celebrated on that very day? So again, we're looking for the big Marian miracle happening in South America on Carlo Acutis' feast day of October 12th. If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you have the right answer. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be hearing from Tim Moriarty from Castletown Media, the director of the film Carlo Acutis, Roadmap to Reality. Stay with us for that.
Back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. As I've mentioned before many times, my patron saint is Carlo Acutis, the new saint from Rome, with the canonization happening there in Rome on the 27th. And I'm so excited to be there in person. And this is a big moment for me personally. I've spoken with his mother on different interviews, and I've got a little icon of Carlo, and I definitely pray to him when my technology isn't working right. But also his focus on miracles is something that he and I share. So I always am inspired by the work that he did on his website in promoting Eucharistic miracles and Marian apparitions and otherwise. So I feel to be a kindred spirit with Carlo Acutis in some ways, so I'm beyond excited about his canonization coming up on April 27th. So excited to be there in person. Well, today we've got Tim Moriarty. He's the director of a brand new film that'll be hitting theaters on April 27th, the canonization day. The name of that film is Carlo Acutis, Roadmap to Reality. People can find out more at carloacutisfilm.com. Welcome to the program today, Tim Moriarty.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael. It's a real pleasure and honor to be speaking with you.
This was a great film. I had the opportunity to take an early look at it, and it is so well done, and I think audiences everywhere are going to be excited to learn the backstory, the background of Carlo Acutis. And we see interviews with his mother and father and various people, authors and otherwise, people related to him who have a lot to say about the young saint. How did this project gain traction? How did it get started?
Yeah, absolutely. So my company is Castletown Media, and we previously worked on a couple different documentaries, most recently Mother Teresa, No Greater Love, which was a Knights of Columbus film. And then last year with Jim Wahlberg, we produced Jesus Thirst, the Miracle of the Eucharist. And there was a gentleman down in Beaumont, Texas, who had really a great benefactor of the church down there, had built a youth camp for kids. And his bishop, Bishop Toops, wanted to name the chapel after Carlo Acutis, and he'd never heard of him. So he read a book and was just deeply moved. And Jim had been giving a talk there at a men's group. And the idea just came to this gentleman, boy, we need a film about Carlo. And so he approached us with the idea. About a month later, Mrs. Acutis was actually traveling in the United States, and she made a visit down to Beaumont. So I was able to fly down there and meet with her and talk to her about what angle we would take on this. We sat down and said, you know, a lot of folks have done some work on Carlo, what his life was all about, emphasizing just the fact that he was relatable. But what did she think was important to tell? And she said, you know, Carlo was ordinary. He wore blue jeans and sneakers. But really, he was a mystic. I mean, he was a mystic who had a deep, deep prayer life. And she said, yeah, he was the first, you know, he's been called the first digital saint. But he was also aware that this whole digital world has dangers, too. And she told the story right then and there that, you know, he loved computers and he loved video games. But he had read articles, even as a young person, about kids getting addicted to video games. So he actually monitored his use. He would only allow himself 1 hour a week playing with his PlayStation. So she said, I think that angle, the Carlo, needs to get out more. And so that kind of set us off on a journey to tell the story of Carlo, but really to put Carlo in relationship to our contemporary cultural moment, to the crisis facing young people with screen addiction, to the mental and spiritual crisis they're facing with really high depression rates and isolation, and really examine what is this virtual world that we're increasingly living in, and how in many ways is it antithetical to the sacramental world, to this extension of the incarnation where Christ meets us in the Eucharist most especially, which Carlo was deeply devoted to. So that's a little of the backstory and why we wanted to take this angle to our film, which was about Carlo, but it was also, what does Carlo mean for us today, especially young people who are facing just the tremendous challenges of this cultural confusion, this milieu of the virtual melding into the real and the confusion about what is real?
Yeah, no, that was one of the things that caught me off guard when I watched the film. I thought, well, this is going to be a biography only of Carlo Acutis. I'm going to learn all these things. And I did learn so many things. And I must say the film is so well done. The production value is tremendous on this film. And the graphics, et cetera, are so well executed. But I was surprised to see the interplay in the storylines between the Carlo Acutis background and also how the digital age is affecting the youth. And I thought that was so interesting, the interplay between those two ideas. And would you just to restate it, was that his mother's idea to focus on that aspect?
It was very much inspired by that conversation. Yeah. It was very much this sense of Carlo. There can be a naive way of looking at Carlo. And this is, you know, where she would say, he's on the internet. Isn't that great? But it's more like, no, he was on the internet in a very specific way. He was on the internet. Chris Stefanik, who we interviewed, actually had a great line during the interview where he said he was online to get people offline. He was online to lead people back to real face-to-face encounters. He was online to get people back to the Eucharist. He used this incredible research he's done, Eucharistic miracles, to reawaken people to the reality of Christ's presence in the Eucharist. So it was very much inspired by by the conversation with Mrs. Acutis. It was also inspired by something that G.K. Chesterton wrote about, you know, the saint is an anecdote to the ills of the age, that every age gets the saint that it needs. So that question of what does Carlo mean? What do we need today, especially young people? What do they need today? So that whole question of, let's take a deep look at this. There was years ago, The Social Dilemma was a documentary that came out, and it was a kind of a sociological analysis of what is this, what's happening to people, social media. We wanted to sort of say, what is a theological look at this? And how do we rediscover really the sacramental worldview by seeing the ways in which the virtual world puts humanity at threat? So there were really three elements to the film. One was the biography of Carlo, diving deep into that. One was this look at the rise of a technological worldview. And then we knew we needed to give flesh to it. We had these two elements, and they both felt rich, but we wanted to sort of show a real journey. We didn't want to just tell people stuff. We wanted to actually give them an experience. So there's a number of things in the film that were very providential. One was I reached out to Monsignor Shea's office at the University of Mary, and I got in touch with Jerome Richter, who is a vice president there, and trying to organize this interview with Monsignor. And he said, this might be the Holy Spirit, but I'll tell you what, in 3 days, we're going to take 150 high school kids to Italy on pilgrimage. And the culmination of that pilgrimage is to visit Carlo's tomb. But here's the kicker. We're asking them to leave their phones at home. And so I called my co-director and I said, boy, can you drop everything and get to North Dakota like tomorrow? And so that then became the through line of the film, where we wanted to see this journey of young people. And we see them at the beginning of the film, they're on their screens 7-8 hours a day. And many are very honest about the faith not feeling very real to them. Many were raised Catholic. They just say, I don't know if I really believe this. And we wanted to see them kind of walk this journey to the depths of reality, the real glories of reality, by visiting the great sites in Rome, visiting Eucharist and miracle sites, learning about Carlo, weaving Carlo's story into their journey. And by the end, kind of just seeing how Carlo is inspiring this generation to rediscover what in many ways the virtual world is making us numb to, which is reality in its fullness, embodied reality. And sort of show how Carlo, as the first millennial saint, is a sign of great hope. So that's a little bit of the backstory. It did feel very providential, where we knew that we had something interesting to say, but in a documentary and in a film, you want to give people an experience. You don't want to just tell them what to think. You want to do more showing than telling. And that's why the third element, this tracking this pilgrimage, was so important, and felt very just grateful that, sort of God gave that to us, really, just when we were looking for something, and it was so clear that this is the story we needed to take.
We're talking today with Tim Moriarty from Castletown Media, director of the new film, Carlo Acutis, Roadmap to Reality. It's in theaters starting on April 27th, which is, coincidentally or otherwise, the feast, the canonization date for Carlo Acutis. And people can go to carloacutisfilm.com for more information. And Tim, when you went into this and you gathered those high school students and filmed them at the beginning, and some of their comments were, eye-opening, their lack of belief, their lack of interest, perhaps, their focus on the digital world, you might say. Did you, were you surprised to see the effect that visiting the tomb of Carlo and visiting these amazing places in Italy had on them?
I would say yes and no. I mean, on the one hand, having been on my own journey, having walked away from the faith, and then coming back, knowing the reality of the depths of reality that are always on offer to us, it wasn't surprising that if you can take people on a journey and get them away from their distractions, that something will happen, that God works, that God will work. And what was surprising, though, was what was really to me telling was the honesty at the early part of our documentary, where they a lot of these kids come from great families, and they were just honest. You know, when you live your life on your screen that amount of time every day, there's a kind of something becomes desensitized. And I think for me, it was just a tremendous sign of hope, because there can be a lot of you know, negative news, demographic, statistical news, you know, people leaving the church, all, you know. But then it's like when young people or people in general are able to really walk, go on pilgrimage, and experience the true richness of the faith, God really takes over. And so I think we didn't know what we were going to get when we went on that pilgrimage. In a way, we knew we needed to capture it, but that was one of the really, I think, huge blessings of it, is we didn't know which students, you know, to really, whose journey to track. It was more a place of unknowing, but saying, okay, the Holy Spirit will sort of guide us in the filmmaking. And I have to give a lot of credit to my co-director, Christian Sertz, who really went on that journey with them and was able to discover the story really in real time with them. So I think for us, it was really a sign of hope. And in a way, it really does mirror Carlo's own life. He came from a family that was culturally Catholic, but not practicing. His mother, you know, she says that she'd maybe been to church 3 times in her life. And
I know, that line was shocking in the movie when I heard her say that. That was incredible.
I know, it's true. It's true. And so we're in a kind of post-Christian world now. And instead of feeling fearful or sad about it, this is a story of what God is doing in that situation, where he's stirring hearts, like Carlo, who at 4 years old was drawn to the church, drawn to the tabernacle. That to us was like, okay, let's take a look at this moment. There's so much negative news. There's so much darkness around us. There's so much out there. And we go into that in sort of the sections where we look at technology. There is something nefarious at play in this war of attention that's being inflicted on us. But in the midst of that, God is doing something remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And I think at the heart of it is, you know, as Catholics, it's a rediscovery of his presence in the Eucharist. And Carlo knew that intuitively, and he was pointing to that in everything he did. He shows us a way towards renewal. So I would say there's many surprises, but at the same time, it was a real affirmation of faith that God is present to us and working with us today.
Absolutely. Well, we're so grateful to you for joining us on today's program and talking to us about this new film. People can find out more at carloacutisfilm.com. When can they watch this? How do they watch this film about Carlo Acutis?
Yeah, we're very excited. We're in over 1,000 theaters. It's a pretty wide release, and the ticket sales have been so good. The theaters are actually surprised. They're actually adding a couple dates. So opening is April 27th is canonization day. It's a way for people to participate really in the celebration of his canonization. You know, you're not able to travel to Rome. We're able to share in that here in the United States. So on our website, people can, you know, just type in their zip code and find out the local theater. And so April 27, and we've got 5 days where it'll be in theaters. So encourage people to check there, and then we'll be updating, you know, where it will be available after that. But there's something really, there's something about going to the theatrical, going to a theater with people who are encouraged, you know, groups, parishes, discussion groups, school groups, youth groups. There's a lot of, I think, beauty in going to this together. And the other thing we're doing, we partnered with the McGrath Institute for Church Life. They've created a really beautiful discussion guide that accompanies the film for people to kind of reflect on. Another partner of ours is the National Eucharistic Revival. They're also a sponsor who I think this really aligns with the work that they're doing and really renewing and reviving a deep faith in Jesus and the Eucharist. So yeah, I encourage people to check out the website. We really hope this is not just a film, but a kind of conversation starter in the church, a celebration of our first millennial saint, and kind of a deep reflection on what he means to us and for us, and what God is doing, what has done through this young man, and how do we take those lessons to heart.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Tim Moriarty from Castletown Media, director of the new film, Carlo Acutis, Roadmap to Reality, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael. God bless.
God bless. That was Tim Moriarty talking to us about this great new film about Carlo Acutis. My favorite new saint, my patron saint. You're going to love this one. Go to carloacutisfilm.com for more information. Check it out in theaters starting April 27th. We need to take a short break.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I got an interesting question this past week when I was speaking, and it was a tough one. But I love getting people's questions. I love hearing what people are thinking about, and I travel all around the country at different parishes, shrines, religious organizations, conferences, and I talk, of course, about miracles, sometimes about how the church investigates, sometimes about Eucharistic miracles, sometimes about Marian apparitions. It all depends. But I speak for 45 minutes and then usually open it up to questions, and I love to hear what people are thinking about. One very interesting question that I got during my last talk was, is it possible that the children killed in the recent Minnesota shooting may be canonized someday as martyrs? Now, that's a very tough question, of course, with this memory fresh in our minds. Maybe down the road at some point this will be considered. But when it comes to martyrdom, we talk about people being killed in odium fidei, out of hatred for the faith. So, in canonization causes where somebody is being proposed as a martyr, they look at the circumstances of death and they say, was this person killed because of their faith? And these children were killed at Mass, and the shooter was said to have a hatred towards the Catholic faith. And so perhaps this is something that will be considered down the road someday. And this is the typical type of martyrdom where we see somebody who was practicing their faith or standing up for their faith, and somebody who took issue with that and ended their life. So anything's possible in this case, but it's an interesting question. And it's certainly a question on the mind of Catholics all around the United States. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, or Lourdes, February 11th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up each day to the calendar year from somewhere around the world. So for today's date, we've got Our Lady of the Mount from Bandra in Mumbai in India in the year 1570. And the story goes that a beautiful wooden statue of Our Lady, depicted as the Mother of God, was initially brought by the Jesuits from Portugal in the year 1570, when a simple mud oratory for private devotion was built near Land's End, Bandra, overlooking the Arabian Sea. In 1700, Bandra was invaded by a pirate army by the Muscat Arabs, who ransacked the chapel for treasure. They were disappointed in not finding great riches. They chopped off the right forearm of the statue, thinking it was of gold. They also intended to set fire to the church when a huge army of bees attacked them so cruelly that they were forced to leave. And when the Mount Mary Chapel was rebuilt in 1761, the damaged statue was repaired. Over the centuries, devotion to this statue grew as numerous favors were granted. And that's Our Lady of the Mount from Bandra, Mumbai, in India, in 1570. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website, 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, download the app, or join the Facebook page of that has over 10,000 followers of people who get a different title of Mary each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we try to find a miracle that lines up exactly to the day's date and someday in some date in Christian history in some year. And so for today's date, we've got the 13th of September. Our Lady of Salta, the Virgin of the Miracle of Salta, was from September 13th, 1692. And the story goes that during a devastating earthquake in Salta, Argentina, on September 13, 1692, a statue of the Immaculate Conception fell but remained completely undamaged. And this was seen by the local people as miraculous. It sparked devotion to Nuestra Señora del Milagro, or Our Lady of the Miracle. And that is today's 365 Days with Mary item from the year 1692. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We talk about people on the path to sainthood, whether they're servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. But this week, of course, the big news was the canonization of Pier Giorgio Frassati and Carlo Acutis. This was September 7th, Pope Leo XIV presiding in his very first canonization. And, of course, we know of Pier Giorgio Frassati, who lived from 1901 to 1925. He was a layman, a young person in lay associations, and he committed himself wholeheartedly to initiatives of social development and charity towards the poor and the sick until he died when he was struck by paralysis. And, of course, Carlo Acutis, 1991 to 2006, as a young boy, he was deeply devoted to the Virgin Mary and the Eucharist. He developed computer projects on faith-related topics. He also had extensive volunteer experience with the homeless and soup kitchens there. He was struck by leukemia. He died at 15 years old on October 12, 2006. And their feast days were just announced for Pier Giorgio on his death anniversary, and also the same for Carlo Acutis on October 12th, his death anniversary. So that is the big sainthood news coming out of Rome this week. We also like to talk about They Might Be Saints, the Might Be Saint of the Day, a person whose death anniversary or feast day is lining up exactly to the day's date. For September 13th, we've got Blessed Maria Lopez de Rivas Martinez, who lived from 1560 to 1640 in Spain. And she was born on August 18th, 1560 in Guadalajara in Spain. And she was born wealthy, but gave it all up. Her father died when Maria was 4 years old, and she was raised by her paternal grandparents. She was well-educated and joined the Carmelites at Toledo at age 17 and lived 63 years as a Carmelite nun. She was a stigmatic, a prioress, and in 1600, she was unjustly accused of an offense by one of her sisters, and she was removed as prioress and was isolated for 20 years. She was a close friend of St. Teresa of Avila, and Teresa trusted her so much that Maria was a test reader for the interior castle. And she died on September 13th, 1640 in Toledo, was declared venerable by Paul VI, and also blessed on November 14th, 1976 by Pope Paul VI as well. And that is today's Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Maria Lopez de Rivas Martinez from Spain. With one more miracle, she will be declared a saint. And for those people who want to check out the television series They Might Be Saints, it airs every week on EWTN. And this week on September 19th, the episode of They Might Be Saints, Rhoda Wise, will air. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles. One of them was experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica of EWTN. You can check this one out on Tuesday, September 16th, or go online to EWTN's on-demand site, ondemand.ewtn.com, and you can watch it that way. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be hearing from the mother of Carlo Acutis. Antonio Salzano will be joining us to talk about him and her book, My Son Carlo. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. This past week, I got some news that was some of the most exciting news I've seen in a long time. as the Miracle Hunter. Popping up in my phone was the reports of a new miracle that was approved in the canonization cause for Blessed Carlo Acutis, soon to be Saint Carlo Acutis. And for those people who don't know, he's the young man who died from leukemia. But he had a great affinity for the Eucharist, of course. He had a great devotion to the Eucharist, and he developed that Eucharistic Miracles of the World exhibit that you might see in parishes all around the United States. And for me, I consider him to be my patron saint of MiracleHunter.com. For many years, I prayed to him every single day because he had a great interest in Marian apparitions and Eucharistic miracles, just like I do. And he was the builder of websites, just like me. So for me, he is my ultimate saint, and I've got an icon of him on my desk. I pray to him every single day. So truly, he is my patron saint, and to see that a second miracle has been found through his intercession that will lead to his canonization gave me great joy and almost brought me to tears. So I'm so excited today. We're going to be joined by a very special guest, and who better to tell the story of this young saint who progressed on the path to sainthood and converted many hearts, including hers. And that's Antonio Salzano, the mother of Carlo Acutis. We're so honored to be joined by you today, Antonio. Thank you for being on today's program.
Good morning to everybody. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we're so so excited to talk with you. And I think in the history of the canonizations of the church, perhaps there are as many as 10,000 saints that have been recognized formally by the church, it is a very rare thing for a mother to be given the news that their son will be canonized and to be given the opportunity to attend a canonization mass. It's incredibly rare. Most saints, it doesn't work that way. It takes hundreds of years, perhaps, for a saint to be recognized. But in your case, Antonia, you have seen your son with your own two eyes as you're alive, progressing along the path, and now he is a saint. Talk about how you learned of this news.
Yes, of course, we were very happy about the news because we reached the goal, no? That in the canonization is the highest declaration of the church, and of course this allow us also, and all the devotees he has around the world, if you want, they want to build churches, sanctuary, they can do now after the canonization. And for us, it was a sign of hope, a great sign of hope, because Carlo has a lot of devotees around the world that are following his spiritual example, and entitled prayers groups and schools and many, many chapels, oratories. So for them, they were very happy. We received from all over the world congratulations, emails, all these things. But for me, it's a very important sign that God gave us, because through Carlo, that is a saint of nowadays, and he overpassed all the dangers we are all living. Sometimes some people are very depressed about the time. They speak about difficult situation around pornography, alcohol, drugs, all these dangers that threaten our young people. But Carlo overpassed all these things and was a winner against all the dangers, you know? And in a certain way, he showed us that nevertheless, all the problems, all the dangers, it is possible also now in the third millennium to become a saint.
Absolutely. It's such exciting news for our Catholic Church, and I think the Church has put a special focus on Carlo. They've wanted this canonization to move forward, and they've investigated the miracles, and we have this one that just came out recently that was approved by Rome. So I think that the Church itself and the faithful, especially young people, might see Carlo as a great intercessor. We've been talking today with Antonio Salzano, the mother of Carlo Acutis, soon to be a saint, and she's the author of the book, My Son Carlo, Carlo Acutis Through the Eyes of His Mother, from our Sunday Visitor. And I read something recently that I didn't know about you, Antonia, that you you felt at some point to receive some sort of a sign from God. Perhaps it was a vision of St. Francis of Assisi or some sort of internal understanding of the future that would be held for your son moving along the path to sainthood and the influence you would have on the world. Talk a little bit about that sense that you had of that heaven was speaking to you in some way?
Of course, we received during the life of Carlo many signs, but before, when he was in agony, that he was ill, I dreamt about St. Francis of Assisi, which is our saint, favorite saint, and we have the house, we bought the house in Assisi because of St. Francis, and Carlo was ill. It seems that he had only a normal flu, a cold. Instead, behind that cold, there was the leukemia, which is a silent illness. And once during these days, these last days of Carlo, he was still at home, I dreamed about St. Francis, who told me that Carlo would be very high in the church. I didn't understand this dream, and because it was a little bit strange, difficult for me to understand. And after I heard like a sort of locution, I'm not a mystic at all, but something like a voice that say, Carlo will die. Huh? And I didn't understand this thing. And then after 2-3 days after, Carlo couldn't move. One morning woke up, couldn't move, and we have to take him to the hospital. And then we had the terrible diagnosis of leukemia that at that time was not very possible to cure because it was the most fulminous one. But now I always prayed, Carlo, please, Carlo, find the way to that they can discover the cure. And luckily now there is the cure to heal this terrible illness. And so that is a little bit the story of St. Francis, who was always close to us, gave us so many signs. St. Francis considered was a saint that used to attend Mass 2 days a week, two times a day, and there was a very Eucharistic saint. This is the reason why Carlo was so devout.
And one of the things that I find so fascinating, and we're talking today with the mother of Carlo Acutis, what I find so fascinating is in the story of most children, they learn their faith from their parents, perhaps. They see their parents leading them towards the sacraments and otherwise and mass attendance. But in the case of Carlo, perhaps it was through his nanny, Beata, who exposed him to mass. And Carlo ended up being an inspiration to you. Isn't that true, Antonia?
Yes, it's true. It's true. Carlo was a little savior for me. I always tell. Through Carlo, I got deeper in my faith. Before, I was like a Protestant, even if I was Catholic. And unfortunately, I grew in a family. I like family. They never bring me to Mass. And it was very difficult for the religious point of view, my family. And I was a lonely child. And with Carlo, instead, I really... since he was very small, he was so, religious, pious in his constitutionally. And little by little, he helped me to understand that in the Blessed Sacrament, there is the real presence of God. And before, I was really like a Protestant. I thought that the sacraments were only symbols, nothing more. And I always say that the discovery of the real presence of God in the Blessed Sacrament was the discovery of my life, the most important thing, because since I entered in this mystery, I understood. I started with Carlo to go to Mass each day, to do Eucharistic adoration each day like Carlo. And really, for me, it changed my life. And really, Jesus healed me and purified him, transfigured me, even if I still have to convert, because probably I will finish in the purgatory my conversion. But anyway, I really saw the change in my life. The way I was looking at the world changes completely. Because really, Jesus, when he entered the Blessed Sacrament, you start to really do seriously an Eucharistic life. Your life changed completely.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Antonia Solzano, the mother of Blessed Carlo Acutis, It was just announced this past week that he will be Saint Carlo Acutis coming soon. And I think here in the United States, we have this Eucharistic revival. It's the national movement to reorient the faithful towards the Eucharist. And it's a three-year process. There's going to be a big Congress coming up in July of this current year. And Carlo Acutis has been the patron saint of that effort, and people have been focusing him and him in relation to Eucharistic miracles especially. Talk a little bit about Carlo Acutis's, your son's interest in the miraculous, whether it's the apparitions of Mary or in the miracles of the Eucharist, and that how that propelled his faith.
Because Carlo teaches the catechism for 5 years, and he realized that there are queues in front of a concert, in front of a football match. But he used to say, "I don't see this queue in front of the tabernacle that is at Jerusalem among us, is the house of God, because God promised I will be with you to the end of the world." And he remains with us, and he hides behind the Blessed Sacrament, but he's really present. As Pope Benedict used to say, he's physically present. Of course, God is everywhere from a spiritual point of view, but in the Blessed Sacrament, he wanted to remain physically. And this awareness of Carlo was so strong, so big. He started to go to Mass when he was 7 years old each day, and to do Eucharistic adoration each day. And really, for Carlo, the meeting of Jesus in the Holy Mass each day was the most important appointment. And Carlo used to say that the Eucharist is the highway to heaven, because really, when the secret of sainthood is to love God over all and our brother and sister like ourselves, like Jesus says. And we know that Jesus is love, and when we receive the Eucharist, Jesus helps us to open the heart to love God over all and our brother and sister always more, no? So he really transfigured us. So this is the reason why for Carlo the Eucharist was the highway to heaven. And the Virgin Mary, of course, is the Mother of God, was the first ideal tabernacle, because his womb was the first tabernacle in a certain way. And she is, we have to imitate her, the way she was, the humility of the Virgin Mary. And she teach us to, of course, we have to be like Mary, no? A sort of a tabernacle for Jesus, because when we receive Jesus, we have to be, first of all, the house, the ideal house of Jesus, our heart. But especially we have to, at the school of Jesus, we have to learn, like Virgin Mary, to be humble, to understand that nothing, all the good things there are in the world is because of God, not because of us. And all the bad things comes from ourselves. So it's important to understand that without Jesus, we cannot do anything. And the apparition of the Virgin Mary, the one that the Church recognized through the century, there are many, many, and really are sign of hope. And the Virgin Mary recall us to the angelic life, to do penance, to understand that it is possible. The eternal life exists, the paradise, the possibility of hell, purgatory. So she always is like a mother, a loving mother that wants to remind us the most important thing, that is the eternal life, because our motherhood is heaven, not this world. And so Carlo used to say the infinity is our motherhood, not the finitude of this world.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. We've been talking today with Antonio Saldano, the mother of Blessed Carlo Acutis, soon to be Saint Carlo. And Antonio, we're so grateful to you for you joining us in this program today. I am hopeful to see you in Rome for the canonization myself. I hope to be there, and we're all waiting for the date to be announced so that we can all get our plane tickets.
We are waiting. In June, we should know something, we hope.
Wonderful.
And so we should know the date.
Well, I'm hopeful to see you there. And as I say, Carlo has been my patron saint for many years for my website, miraclehunter.com, and my work studying miracles. So I'm so excited from a personal point of view about this. And I know you as his mother, there's got to be nobody more excited than you about this. So congratulations on this great honor being bestowed on your son. And we pray for his intercession for Catholics around the world, including especially the young. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Tim Moriarty from Castletown Media, talking about Carlo Acutis' Roadmap to Reality. And also Antonio Salzano, who joined to talk about her son's canonization, Carlo Acutis, and about her book, My Son Carlo, Carlo Acutis Through the Eyes of His Mother. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday. But this Saturday, September 13th at 5:30 p.m., we have a brand new episode that's never been aired before, and that is Buenos Aires. So in Buenos Aires, I uncover the story behind a modern Eucharistic miracle, an astonishing testament to the real presence investigated by the future Pope Francis. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.